This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:04 in the evening, and unusually for us, actually, our first two stories today are all about parenting.
Out of the 196 countries worldwide, there are seven countries who don't have laws requiring paid maternity leave. Suriname, Marshall Islands, Micronesia, Papua New Guinea, Tonga, the United States of America, Palau. Wait, what?
So yes, kicking off with news about maternity leave, CIMB Group Holdings Berhad announcing yesterday that its employees in Malaysia who are first-time mothers will get 6 months of paid maternity leave.
In a statement, they said the benefit took effect on January 1st this year. The fresh benefit came after its announcement of 1 month paid paternity leave for first-time fathers last year. So first-time mothers can choose to enjoy this benefit as early as 30 days before their estimated delivery date. And they also have a program that would allow employees up to 6 months unpaid leave, meaning first-time mothers could effectively take a whole year off to care for their firstborn.
The group is exploring the possibility of extending this new benefit to its employees across the group. CIMB Group's chief people officer said the group believes that by allowing first-time parents a longer period to adjust to parenthood, they could create a more meaningful and positive experience with their firstborns while maintaining their career. This approach is broadly supported by science. Here's Lauren Smith Brody, founder of The Fifth Trimester, addressing why 6 months is the perfect amount of time.
When you look at the science of what a good parental leave looks like, it is 6 months of paid leave because according to the research that's been done, 6 months is the point at which a mother is much less likely to suffer from a postpartum mood disorder or anxiety disorder. That is also 6 months of paid leave is the protective amount for baby's health. And babies who have had mothers who have been able to take that amount of leave paid are much more likely to be vaccinated on time, are actually less likely to have ear infections and respiratory infections, it's been shown, which sounds really specific, but it is actually due to their mother's ability to breastfeed longer, which, and I'm very much a fed is best kind of person. However you feed your baby, great. I just want you to be able to make the choices that are best for you. So basically, all of the science shows that it takes at least 6 months to start really feeling normal again. And that's because you are hormonal. Your body has been through the most enormous change any body could go through. And yet, you're expected to be back on the job just the way you were before.
So CIMB Group has several other initiatives that support employees' family needs, including a work-from-home policy which allows staff with children aged 5 and below or with special needs to work from home 1 day a week. And I didn't necessarily think that it would be a bank that would be leading the charge, I have to admit. But
because that usually comes up in our conversations that, oh, what about these industries? And banking is usually cited as one of those industries that cannot or are unable to have longer maternity leave or, well, for the matter of fact, flexible working hours.
Well, I mean, Lauren Smith Brody also actually spoke about how it impacts the economy positively. People often think that it's got a negative impact, right? Mm. Taking this 6 month or 3 month or however many month break in order to be an effective parent, in order to kind of also take care of yourself. But she said that it actually doesn't bear out, and that countries such as Norway, which has very, very lengthy maternity leave, at least by our standards, are also, of course, among the richest countries in the world. So it doesn't necessarily play out that way. For me, though, I'm just so happy to see this taking place. I do think that 6 months, I'm not a mother, but that sounds like at least more appropriate than what we currently have. Right now, it just doesn't seem like there's enough time for you to get into the headspace of A, you know, just being a parent at all, and then B, being a parent who has a job. And I think those are two completely separate things.
And I think with the amount of 6 months, it may seem like it's a lot. Maybe it's a 6 plus 6 sometimes. It really isn't, I think, because 6 months you can do just not so much, I think. I mean, given with how little we have currently, that's not enough. But 6 months, if you just see, like, you don't even really get to properly spend, like, a whole year with your baby when you first have it. And you don't have probably enough time to embrace and be a parent. And I think that will come with a lot of very new challenges for both the mother and father, but more so the mother.
Let us know what you think about this, you know, longer paid maternity leave given by CIMB. Is 6 months enough? Is it just right? You know, if you are a parent and you remember taking maternity or paternity leave, was it enough? Let us know. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Our next story is kind of neatly tied to our first, and it's about how work stress affects your kids.
Mom, I don't feel so good.
So companies have long been aware that sick children have an impact on the professional lives of parents who are obliged to take time off or work from home, which may then affect their efficiency. But is the converse also true? In a recent study, a team of researchers set out to assess the impact of parents' work-related stress on the health of their children.
So this study was published in the Journal of Occupational Health Psychology, and it suggests that parents who have a sense of control over their professional lives are less exposed to work stress, and the children in their homes are less likely to be sick. So I'll say that again. Basically, parents who have, you know, more control over their professional lives are less exposed to work stress. That makes sense. But then they found that children in those homes are less likely to be sick, which I think is kind of interesting. So the research team collected health data for two groups of parents and children, one low-income group and one more affluent one living in Lagos, Nigeria.
One interesting aspect of their findings was that this difference in the level of income between the two groups did not directly correlate to high levels of parental work stress or poorer children's health. Analysis of the results showed that economic resources had no incidence on either of these. So what did have an impact, though, was the degree of autonomy parents enjoyed in their professional lives. Those without much control were more vulnerable to work-related stress and also less likely to exercise enough self-control as parents, which in turn can negatively affect children's health. Here's a snippet from physician Dr. Gabo Mate discussing parental stress and the negative impact it has on children.
A whole number of studies have shown that parents who are stressed, their children are more likely to have asthma. In other words, the child's lung functioning is actually affected by the emotional stress on the parent. In other words, the child is very plugged into the parent, emotionally and even biologically, and whatever stresses the parent will stress the child. And if you look at the numbers of kids that are being diagnosed now with all kinds of conditions, ADHD, autism, Asperger's, Tourette's, bipolar illness, anxiety, depression, this burgeoning of these diagnoses, it can't possibly be genetic because genes don't change in a population over 10, 15, 20 years. So if the number of prescriptions for stimulant medications for ADHD has gone up 43% in the last 5 years, we're not looking at a genetic effect. Genes don't change over 5 years, over 15 years, even 500 years. Something's going on in society, and what's going on is that the stress quotient is increasing on parents.
So the study showed that this phenomenon was amplified by demanding jobs with very, very low levels of autonomy. And as the study's co-author and professor of industrial organizational psychology at the University of Houston, Christiane Spitzmuller, explains, if you can decide how you're going to do your job rather than having that imposed on you, it is better for children. And this is one of those academic studies, I feel, that has identified something that is very common sense. Like, I'm glad that it's proven by science, and I didn't necessarily make the correlation between stress at work and children's health. But I think the idea that if you have no control over your job, over, you know, what you're going to do day to day, over how much your workload is, understandably, you're going to be way more stressed.
I thought it would be the inverse. And I think by autonomy, and what my impression of it is, that you get to choose what you want to do. You get to choose where you want to work. So I thought perhaps those things might actually tire out your willpower and your ability to make decisions. And because you get so tired from being at work and making all those decisions, by the time you come back, and what makes the children sick, probably maybe because you just want to choose the easiest thing for them to eat. Oh, let's just go to McDonald's to get dinner. And that's easy. So that was my impression, that perhaps if you had, well, not to say less autonomy, but if you had to make less choices at work, that you might be better be able to, you know, give your children healthier lives.
Interesting. No, yeah, my impression was very much just to do with how stressed you are, I suppose. And I do think that having a job where you get to determine your own time, you get to determine your own workload, your schedule, that allows you to tell your children, hey, I'll be home at six today. and know that you can fulfill that promise, as opposed to being in a situation where you're working with, say, an erratic boss who's suddenly going to pop up at 5:45 and say, hey, you know that hour-long meeting that we were supposed to have at 3 today? Let's have it now. You know, and so I think that's where that kind of stress and insecurity and inconsistency comes from as well. I'm not sure how much of it has to do with parental decisions that you make after that. I think it's very much to do with the fact that if you're just super stressed, if you're unable to be a consistent presence, if you're unable to plan appropriately for your kids, then it's understandable that there might be some correlation there. Let us know what you think. I mean, we were speaking earlier about maternity leave.
CIMB has offered 6 months to first-time mothers.
Yes, they have, saying that they feel that this is the appropriate amount of time to be spending. Do you agree with that? If you've taken your maternity or paternity leave, did you wish that you had that kind of amount of time as well? And we're also discussing a finding from a study that said that basically if you have less control over your professional life and you're more exposed to work stress, strangely, the children in your home might, you know, be more likely to be sick. Do you find this to be the case? Do you find that your work stress leaks out into the rest of your life? And what causes that stress? Talk to us and let us know. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be talking about retirement. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It is 5:17 in the evening, and this is the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We've been talking about maternity leave. We've also been talking about work stress and how that can have an impact on your child's health. But we just wanted to extend that conversation to, you know, does your work stress end up affecting the people in your life? Actually, we didn't address this earlier. I do find that when I'm stressed at work, I'm maybe not the most pleasant person to be around. And I'm sure that that ends up impacting a lot of people in my life, my family, my partner, my friends, you know, because you do turn into maybe a little bit of a negative Nancy, shall we say. And I think that stress can end up having pretty significant, if short-term impacts, at least for that period of stress.
My friends tell me that it does actually, they can see it on my face when it's been a rough day at work. And I think it's also obvious. And I think it's something I need to take more, it's something I need to be more aware about, because my mother used to bring a lot of her work stress back home. And then,
were you ill a lot as a child?
I was, but I think that was also mixed with the problem of being quite a picky eater. So I didn't like vegetables, I didn't like certain kinds of meat. My last go-to resort, if really nothing on the table was, wasn't to my liking. It sounds a bit cocky, but if it wasn't to my liking, the simplest meal I would go for is like nasi putih, kicap, and a fried egg. So yeah, I think it's just a mix of those factors. I really wasn't enjoying school, mom stress, work stress brought from home, brought to me, then poor eating.
Let us know what your experience has been with work stress. Does it end up impacting other parts of your life? And also, the study suggests that it has something to do with how much autonomy you have in your workplace. Do you think that that affects your work stress as well? You can let us know. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. Chi Chung says, on the topic of maternity leave, I think 6 months is good enough. I think paternity leave should be extended from the current 1 or 2 days. I assume the baby has a father. And yes, I agree that paternity leave also needs to be extended, especially if we ever want to achieve any sort of parity between the sexes when it comes to parenting. Dr. RK says, great initiative by CIMB for first-time mothers, very first world. Hope other employers learn something from this. Such a measure will enhance staff loyalty to the organization. And I'm inclined to agree. I think that if I were given that option to take that much time, I would know that I am a treasured member of the organization, even if I'm to take that full 6 months, you have given that to me, you know? And I do think that that will build that sense of loyalty.
And I think anecdotally as well, if you look at the likes of, what was the organization that does all that work into expats and also working mothers? I forgot what they're called. But what they found also is that, yeah, you know, mothers tend to be very loyal if you give them very good benefits as they transition into becoming
motherhood.
A working mother or motherhood. And I think the same would apply for men as well if they transition to a working father. And then the organization says, hey, you can have 6 months off as a father. I think that would inspire loyalty.
So we're talking about maternity and paternity leave. We're also talking about work stress. Keep those messages coming. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Our next story is about rebooting our idea of retirement.
Here's the road trip to life. Go to school, retire, and then die. Wow, doesn't that sound just amazing?
So this story comes from Quartz.com. A new white paper from Aegon, which is a Dutch insurer and asset manager, points out that we now spend more years in retirement than in childhood. But not working for a third of one's life is not just expensive, it's unrealistic for most people.
So this is all to do with the fact that we now have longer life expectancies. Our current retirement expectations were also likely designed for a different era when people just didn't live as long. And if they were lucky, someone else paid them a pension. So the solution to a secure, fruitful, worry-free retirement would seem pretty simple, which is to work longer.
But one of the problems would be getting employees to hire older employees. Because while older employees have lots of experience and wisdom, they also tend to cost more because they have accumulated years of salary increases. Mm. And our current culture that prizes youth really means that employees may assume older workers are more rigid, less creative, and are unable to quickly learn new technology.
So Linda Grattan and Andrew Scott, two American professors of management and economics, wrote a book called 100 Year Life that offers ideas on how to keep older workers vital and in demand well into old age. Some of the suggestions are never retiring, although work sabbaticals are okay, constant re-educations, and a new mindset around work.
This may only sound realistic for white-collar workers, but blue-collar workers can retrain and transition into less physically demanding jobs, because right now many workers have no choice but to retire. One of the mindset changes is that we could stop thinking of retirement as a binary state, which is either you work full-time or not at all. Perhaps we could think of work as something that slowly phases out or never at all.
There's even evidence to show that staying in the job might prolong your life. A survey from Flexwork finds that 70% of near retirees say that they need to keep working after they retire, but 60% of them also say that they want to work because work offers socialization and a sense of purpose. Here's a clip from the BBC where medicine professor Thomas Pearls speaks about why never retiring may be a good idea.
No recipe, no secret. It's four easy words. Never, never, never retire. And it's helped me. I never retire.
Obviously, we want to know what their secret is. So we ask them all these complicated, standardized questions to test their memory, their visuospatial skills, their language skills, and so on and so forth, to really get a good idea of the function of their brains. And then, when they pass away, we've asked their permission before they die, as well as the permission of the family to then donate their brain for study, so that we can then see, well, we know what they were like before they died. What do their brains look like after? And what we found was, to our surprise, despite this wonderful cognitive function while they were alive, when we looked at their brains, there was all this pathology that would have been consistent with Alzheimer's disease. And so that brought up this issue, well, how are they able to get away with this pathology? And it is this issue of cognitive reserve, or other people call it resilience, where they have some way of minimizing the effect of that. And scientists have also thought that the way that we naturally build that resilience in our brains are doing things that are really almost like what I liken to muscle building for the brain. Don't smoke. Take good care of yourself. Be socially and cognitively engaged. These habits start early and they need to continue throughout life.
So here's the thing. I've spoken about this before on air. Nobody in my family has ever retired. It's just true. I mean, especially on my father's side, my father is still working. He's going to be... he's going to be 17 next year. He's still working. I don't think he has any intention of ever entirely not working. I have uncles who are working and they're 74, 75. And again, it's something that they enjoy doing. They've slowed down over the years. I mean, they used to be absolute workaholics, but generally speaking, they are... they're well-adjusted, I would say. They're well-adjusted, happy, older folks. And I think it's because they continue to work.
For my mom just retired at the start of this year. And it hasn't been a very good transition, I think, because the reason she was let go was, based on what her management told her, what she told us, was that the... said, for your salary, we can hire two other younger folks who will work just twice as hard and maybe even twice as long. That's quite painful to hear, I think, for you to be able to have been, you know, been so independent and to have so much autonomy, to have so much experience, but then have all that disregarded. It must be very uncomfortable and very painful.
I think it also signifies what people think the salary signifies, right? Because are you paying somebody that much because they've accrued that much experience, or, you know, and that you think two such people, two similar sort of people who have less experience will be able to do the same amount of work. You know, it's just one of those conversations about salary as well. But overall, I do see how if you like what you do, or if you love what you do, then I think keeping engaged, continuing to have the daily guaranteed social interaction of having to go to work, and just getting out of the house, I think is probably pretty valuable for people who are aging and who are therefore more vulnerable to things like loneliness, more vulnerable to things like, you know, getting forgetful, not exercising your mind a certain way. But let us know what you think. Are you keen on retirement still? Or, you know, are you keen on never retiring? Do you want to work forever? Let us know. WhatsApp us your thoughts, 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we've got some music that will take us up to the news. Here's Bruce Springsteen with 10th Avenue Freeze Out. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Building fit Malaysians. BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. And earlier in the show, we were talking about the idea that we basically might be passing on some of our work stress to our kids. More specifically, a study published in the Journal of Occupational Health Psychology suggests that parents who have some sense of control over their professional lives are less exposed to work stress, and then the children in their homes are less likely to be sick. Now, we might not necessarily see that correlation in our own homes, but we were curious about whether or not work stress ends up kind of impacting different parts of your life. Does it spill over into your family and your friends, things like that? So, as usual, we took our trusty recorder, or rather the interns on our team did, and went around the office and asked some questions.
Do you take home your stress at work?
Sometimes, yes, definitely. But luckily, I have a very understanding husband who will sit down and who will listen, who will be very patient with me. And so the stress tends to dissipate. So very thankful for that.
Yeah, I do. I think it indirectly affects me because it's always in the back of my mind. Like, I feel like, oh no, I have this undone task left and I need to get back to it. So if, like, I'm meeting someone after work, it'll carry forward the mood.
Generally, I don't. But there are, of course, times where it's extraneous circumstances, and then, or when I'm learning something new at work, then, of course, that comes home with me, the anxiety and the stress of it. But nowadays I have certain, I like to call, anchors that really help to separate work from life. But of course, it's not perfect. There are a lot of times where it bleeds into each other. And a lot of times what really helps is just putting the phone far, far away.
Yes, and because I think work takes up most of my day, and when I get home, I have like a very short window of time. It takes a while for me to get out of that work mode before I settle in at home. So yeah, I tend to bring it home a lot because I go home late.
Well, I guess when I take stress home, it means that I take work home. And I've been trying to do less of that lately. I've been trying to finish all my work in the office. And it's easier for me to do that because my work is very much on a day-to-day basis because I'm on the news team. So if whatever piece of work that I have has to be done like on that day itself, if not like by the next morning. So I've been trying to do less of bringing work home.
Does work stress directly affect your personal life?
Yeah, I think before, when I was bringing like work home a lot, I found that I was going home, even though I was bringing work home, I was going home very late, and then, you know, I'd miss like meal times with family and things like that. So yeah, it was affecting my personal life. Yeah, and I was late for dinner appointments and things as well, so my friends were not happy about that.
So far, it's not. Work has affected my life on weekdays simply because the hours are a lot longer. I like to keep the work at the office, and because of that, I'm at the office a lot longer. That's what really helps me not bring things home. So obviously, there are times where it's directly affected me in terms of visible stresses. So family and friends get concerned, and I don't socialize with people at those times because you've got to be on the ball and you've got to continue getting whatever that particular project or job, you need to get it done. So those times when things really So I'm guessing for a lot of people, it's like seasonal or project work. Everything else takes a back burner.
So, okay, so let's say he's in a bad mood and I'm in a bad mood, then yes, then it will, you know, sudden weird fights escalate for no reason. And suddenly, you know, when you think back about how the fight started, you realize it was actually triggered by work stress. So these are things that you then consciously kind of remember and then remember not to bring it home, lah, that you just have to leave it at work.
I would say that it does take a lot of my free time away from family. I don't go out much and I don't really socialize much because of that. I tend to just sit in front of the computer and just really be looking at work even over the weekend. Work makes me a little bit more anxious than I usually am. So I'm constantly thinking about, you know, if I'm missing any deadlines or if I'm missing out on something. So in that sense, it affects me a lot personally.
What do you do to separate work stress from your personal life?
I think the two most important things is, one, I always try to make sure that I have a consistent bedtime. I know it sounds very cliched and basic, but it really, really helps. It has helped me program myself to, once I go to bed, I stop thinking about everything else. That in itself has helped with everything else because I believe that sleep is the foundation to everything else. That and also the gym really helps when you feel stressed or whatever. Thankfully, there's a gym in the office building, so it's easy to just go out for a bit and come back, and that really helps de-stress from whatever's going on. And of course, the way I end the day is very simple. It's like, again, when I leave the office, it generally means that my work is done.
That, again, is a conscious effort. It's like, okay, I'm home now, I'm back with my family, I need to stop thinking about work. So what I do is that when I go home now, I don't do any work. Like, I come in early, I'll finish my work, I'll do everything. When I go home, it's just home. Nothing to do with work. I don't check emails. I don't check I ignore WhatsApps and those sorts of things. And then I focus on playing with the children, and as in my actual child and my dogs. So those sorts of things.
As soon as I walk out of that door, you know, I become a different person. So in a way, you just have to build two personalities.
I have this rule where during the weekends, as much as I can, even though it doesn't always work, as much as I can, I try to strictly focus on family or friends only. I try to not check work emails unless it's time sensitive. But yeah, that's my weekends. I try to keep it work free as much as possible.
And those were just some thoughts from BFMers about work stress and how it ends up affecting other parts of their lives, I guess. Let us know if you've got any thoughts. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we've got more music coming your way. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.